Hello, this is Liz Bobo with Reflections on Life. I'm now into my second election cycle, not holding public office in Howard County after serving in public office at the local or state level for over 30 years. And when I left office, I knew that I did not want to go on a lot of boards and commissions, and I wanted to have a free schedule with as little as possible showing up on my calendar every month, every week. And yet within 3 or 4 months, I realized that I was really kind of aimlessly going through using my time. So I set up a schedule of 6 categories: reflections on home in Columbia, reflections on my grandson Zach, reflections on Baltimore, my hometown, reflections on public policy, reflections on our planet beyond the United States, and reflections on the universe. So one quick sentence about each one of those. The benefit of Jim Rouse's diligence in building the town of Columbia has been very present with us this year, whether we know it or not, and that is that it was his decision to put all the utility lines underground. So while so many other communities are struggling, we have had very little interference with our electricity, etc. Reflections on Zach. It's now been 5 years since my grandson died of brain cancer, and his foundation continues to do great work with kids with brain cancer, not just in Maryland now at Hopkins, but throughout the country. And this month, down at the University of Maryland, there will be a big celebration of his life in the big basketball stadium. I don't remember the name of it, but that's where he used to work with the team, and where he actually came back within a week of his brain surgery and was there working, so it would be a wonderful celebration. Reflections on Baltimore, my hometown. Good news, although sad. Also, Ethel Ennis, a jazz heroine in the country and the world, who was a Baltimore resident, a magnificent singer, had offers to leave Baltimore and live just about anywhere in the country and the world to sing, and she chose to live her life here in Baltimore, to which she was dedicated. Reflections on public policy. I'm going to choose the handgun issue. It's looking somewhat hopeful that we may finally beginning to come to our senses and put more restrictions on the availability to handguns at the national level. Reflections on our planet beyond the U.S., the struggles throughout the Middle East. Struggle is too weak a word for it. The atrocities, the suffering, the death that is taking place there, that our country may do the best we can to avoid doing anything to inflame it more than it already is. And reflections on our universe. We had contradiction in words just a couple weeks ago. It was the time for the snow moon, which is a moon that shows up not every year, but in cycles, regular cycles of the moon. But this year we didn't get to see the snow moon because it snowed and we couldn't see the sky. Oh, a reminder to us of how much we are not in control. So, for today's program, I'm so happy to have Bessie Bordenave here with me. I've known Bessie for a long time, but it's been in the last year or so talking about the history of African Americans here in Columbia and Howard County that I have gotten to know her better, and it has been a real joy to me, and I look forward to continuing it and getting to know her still better. Bessie was born in Guilford. She went to elementary and high school here in Howard County. At that time, there were segregated schools, and she has gone on, after having a career working around the world, in New York, in D.C., very successful professional woman. And she moved back here to Howard County not too many years ago when her father was ill, and she has stayed. And what she is doing is devoting her time to getting more history down and on the record about African Americans in Howard County, and particularly the schools that they went to. So right near the community college where we're recording this program, right down Cedar Lane, is the Harriet Tubman School, which has been restored. It is now being used as a museum, and Bessie is the director. So tell us some about this, Bessie.
In 2002, we decided that we would start the Harriet Tubman Foundation. It was a small group of us got together at the Locust United Methodist Church, and we wanted to have the Harriet Tubman building turned back over to the community. So that's when it actually started.
Okay. And from there, it is now being used as partly a museum?
It's being renovated so that we can have the building as a museum and a culture center for the community. Prior to that time, after the school closed in 1965, it was used through the county. Part of the building was used for the Head Start program.
Mm-hmm. So Harriet Tubman herself played about as major a role as anyone did in helping slaves escape from the South. And she did that largely through the use of what was called the Underground Railroad. Would you tell us a little bit about that and how the location of the Underground Railroad fits in Howard County?
Yes, it actually was not a railroad as a lot of people think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was more or less people showing the slaves how to get from one place to the other place safely. And we've discovered here in Howard County, in Simpsonville, actually, at the bottom of the hill near Route 32 in Cedar Lane, there is a cave that sits there. And it is believed that some of the slaves were hiding in that cave when some of the slave masters or slave chasers were trying to find them, or bounty hunters were trying to find them. But because the slaves had gotten in this cave and did not disturb the spider web, the bounty hunters continued on, so they were unable to catch those particular slaves. It is also believed that there were the Underground Railroad in other parts of Howard County, specifically over in the Elk Ridge area, which is close to the railroad tracks.
So what is the, there are so many museums going up now. There's obviously the major new African-American museum down on the mall in Washington, D.C. We have the Reginald Lewis Museum in downtown Baltimore. We have another, I'm not sure what it is called, but over on the Eastern Shore, another museum to slaves. Did these all come up, pop up independently of each other? Or, you know, what's happening that's making us pay so much closer attention now after all these years?
I think what's happening is we are finding out that there has been so much history in the Black community that was never shared, that was never told. And so consequently, different parts of the county and parts of the world, they are coming up with new museums. We have the Great Black Wax Museum in Baltimore that's been in existence for quite some time. The Reginald F. Lewis Museum is a wonderful museum that came into existence, I'm going to say maybe 10, 15 years ago. I'm not sure the exact. And then the new one in Washington, D.C. Those museums are independent of each other, but they have different artifacts, different things in there that you're not going to find in all of them.
Okay, and this is history that we all need to know.
Absolutely.
And to a very recent date, I think it's been mainly African Americans themselves who have been following it, but things like the discovery of this cave is new to everyone, I think. So what kind of reception do you see the African American community and people who are not African Americans, like several people we've talked to at the community college here today before recording, and I'll include myself in the category, who are very interested in this history and who realize that it is crucial that we spell it out, not so that so much that we can know what it was, but that we can learn not to repeat it and not to continue it, not only with African Americans, but with any other group of human beings. Was it Obama's presidency? Did that shine more light on it? What would you say?
I think Obama's presidency contributed to it, but I think that some of the museums have been in existence for quite some time, even before Obama came into office. What we're finding now is a lot of the history of blacks was never really told, and we're finding people who are discovering more and more items that need to be told. The history of blacks, there is a book that was put out back in, I'm going to say in the 50s, 60s, no longer than that, in the 80s, that was put out by Dr. Silas Craft, along with Alice Cornelison and Lily Price Wesley. And that book is entitled History of Blacks in Howard County. It is almost like my Bible because it contains so much information that a lot of people know nothing at all about. So I think that going forward, it is important, and the reception that I've gotten has been overwhelmingly wonderful. Sean Gladden has stepped up, who is with the Howard County Historical Society. Fred Dorsey with Preservation Howard County mm-hmm. has done a wonderful job. And there are many others who have been really very helpful in pulling this together. We even have the Howard County Center of African American Culture. They have a museum over on Vantage Point Road. They have done a wonderful job collecting some of the artifacts that we have here in Howard County. So I think that going forward, this project that we're working on is going to be a wonderful project, not just for the older community, but also for the younger community.
I'm just so appreciative of what you're doing. I want to tell you that. And I'm sure that as more and more people learn about it, more and more people will feel the same way. What, if anything, is being taught? Is there anything being taught in our schools? I mean, I know that we have a very good school system. I think we have a very dedicated superintendent, certainly very dedicated teachers. But they are so, this is my perception, I believe it's correct, they are so restrained in what they can do because there are so many requirements that come down from above them of what they do have to teach. Is there anything being taught in the Howard County schools about, you know, the history of the Harriet Tubman School, about the Underground Railroad, and the fact that Howard County, Maryland, being where it is, right in the center of the East Coast, had to be one of the hubs of that railroad. Do you know if we're teaching anything in the schools about this?
I would say yes, we are teaching some black history in the schools. To what extent, I really don't know, but I do know that there are some programs that they have in the schools that are very, very informative and very, very important. I know that we have had different people going into the schools, especially during Black History Month, to talk to the kids. Has been over to Guilford Elementary School and talked with kindergartners about the Black history and about Guilford Elementary School. So I would say yes, the answer is there is some conversation about Black history in the schools.
We have so many issues in public policy at the international, national, state level that we have to deal with these days, from the environmental issues and the gun violence issues. We could go on and on. But I think more of us are getting to realize that it is crucial that we have an understanding of our own history in order to be as effective as we can be in providing peaceful place where people can live out their lives on this earth. And so I think the work you're doing is, it's certainly not just for African Americans, that's for sure. It's for everyone. And it's not just for African Americans and Caucasians like me, but with the large number of Asians moving into our community and being welcomed and being such a positive element in our community, I think it's important for them to understand the African American history, just as it's important for us to understand their culture as they're moving here. So do you find any lessening in discriminatory behavior toward black people in our community? I mean, just, I don't mean by breaking the law or like we didn't used to let black people, Rosa Parks, move to the right. back of the bus. But how is it improving? Is it remaining the same?
I think that it has improved in a lot of ways. And I'll give you some examples of how I think it is improving. When I went to Harriet Tubman High School, it was an all-black high school. And the teachers, the parents, the principals, they all were like a part of my family. I consider them to be my extended family. And they were dedicated and they were concerned about us getting a good education in those schools. Now, we received hand-me-down things in the school, in the black schools.
You mean in books and
the
desks, etc.?
All of those things were given to us from the white schools.
But then, from the white schools?
From the white schools. Mm-hmm. I can remember them coming from Howard High School, maybe Glendale High School, but they were all brought over to Harriet Tubman. We were determined that in spite of getting these used items, we were going to get a good education. Our principals were dedicated, and we made use of those. We see now that all of the schools are pretty much getting equal opportunity, mm-hmm. equal supplies, equal everything. So that way I see that there has been some change in the condition here in Howard County in the school system.
Well, that's good news for all of us, not just for you. What are the major issues in the African American community now that would distinguish from all residents of Howard County? Education's one. You've just said it.
Right.
It looks like that's going well. How about housing? How are we doing with housing? Before I let you answer, one of my biggest concerns about our county, is that we are becoming a county that's going to be accessible for only upper middle class people to live in.
And I agree.
And it so flies in the face of what Jim Rouse wanted Columbia to be. And we can tell from the buildings and the roads going up that we're going to have many, many more people living here. I personally would prefer that we not grow that much, but that doesn't mean it's negative that we grow that much.
Right.
And I intend to stay here, and I know I'm going to love living here. But it looks to me like we are heading toward having people who do the jobs in the restaurants and the jobs mowing lawns and all the physical jobs are going to have to leave town at the end of the day when they finish their work. And that cannot lead to a healthy a community. So do you see this? And is it true that the black community is part of that group? It's not all blacks,
right,
by any means. And also that there are many, many black people living in Howard County who are not only in the middle, but the upper middle and the upper class, you know, doing very well financially. But there's also a greater proportion, I think, of African Americans than white people in these jobs.
Right. I think that here in Howard County, a lot of the people of color, not just African Americans, and even some of the white people, find it very, very difficult to find apartments that are reasonable, affordable. And consequently, they move out of Howard County. They work in Howard County, but they go home over in Baltimore City, or they go home over in some other county that they can afford to get an apartment or a house. I have seen a lot of the young people here in Howard County who just cannot afford to pay the kind of rent here that we have here in Howard County. Mm-hmm. And they move out. And we're losing some good people by having the skyrocket expense for apartments and housing here in Howard County.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. I hope we'll start doing more to address that. So what else would you like to tell us about having been born in Howard County when it was a segregated county, going to elementary and high school in black-only schools, and then moving on out of the county and out of the state to a very successful career of your own, and then coming back here to be with your parents near the end of their lives, and having made the decision, I believe you told me, to stay here. This is where you want to live the rest of your life.
That's right. Growing up here in Howard County has really been a wonderful experience for me. I lived on Mission Road as a child. We went to school at the Guilford Elementary School at the corner of Mission Road and Guilford Road. My dad would go down early in the morning, along with other people, to set up the fire in the potbelly stove so that when we got there, we would be nice and warm in that school. It was a two-room or three-room school. At that time, the teachers were Mrs. Boone, Mrs. Cooper, and Mrs. Lorraine Arthur. I think Mrs. Lorraine Arthur served as a principal. Not really sure. From there, we went to the Guilford Elementary School on Guilford Road, on Oakland Mills Road. From there, we went to Harriet Tubman High School. Harriet Tubman High School was actually constructed in 1948, but it didn't open until 1949. When it opened in 49, they weren't sure of what the name was going to be. They came up with several names, and they thought it was going to be Atherton High School, but the parents decided they would prefer it being Harriet Tubman High School, which it was. The cornerstone for that building was actually laid in September, I do believe, of 1945, and the school opened in 49. When that school opened in 49, the first graduating class was actually in 1951. And that reason was because there was no exercise during 1949 and 1950 because the 12-year program had not really been implemented. So the first graduating class was in 1951. And it closed in 1965. The principal at the time was Mr. Silas E. Kraft. He was a principal from 49 to 1956. And then Mr. Elhard Fleury took over, and he served as a principal from 46 until 1965. Mr. Fleury and Mr. Nathaniel Gibson were the first and only two people who started with the opening and was there when it actually closed. The name Harriet Tubman was never placed on the building. For some reason, the Board of Education was determined that they were not going to put the name Harriet Tubman on that building.
When was that, Bessie?
When the school opened?
Yeah, what, you remind me of the year.
1949.
Okay, all right.
It was not put on the building until 2002 or 3. I'm not really sure the exact date. And it was not called the Harriet Tubman High School. It was just called the Harriet Tubman Building. And that was done through the Howard County Board of Education when they decided they would put the name on the building. Prior to that time, the PTA had erected a brick wall in front of the building and put the name Harriet Tubman Junior Senior High School, but it was never put on the building as it was in the other schools, which was really kind of disappointing to us that we would go to a building that was nameless. It did
not
have
a name. What was the explanation? What explanation did the board give, if any?
I don't know that they gave any real explanation. Remember, it was during the time when there was segregation, and putting the name of somebody black on a school really might not have sat well with the community. I don't know the exact reason, but I do know that the name was never put on a school. There was Howard High School. It had his name placed on the building. Glenelg had his name on the building, but never our school. So we, for 5 years, we actually went to a nameless school until the brick wall was put in front of the building. So going to Harriet Tubman was a really good experience for me. After I graduated from Harriet Tubman, I got a scholarship to go to the Atlantic Business College because I loved taking shorthand. I loved typing kind of thing. So I went to Washington, D.C. to the Atlantic Business College, graduated from there, and started working with the Federal Communications Commission. A wonderful experience. I couldn't believe here was a little country girl from Guilford going into the city, big city of Washington, D.C. to work. I also had an opportunity to work at the White House during the Lyndon Johnson administration. A wonderful experience. I'll never forget that experience. Then later,
wait, let me stop you there for a minute. How did that opportunity come to you?
While working at the FCC, the White House needed some people to come over to help answer correspondence, to do other things in the White House. And Mrs. Johnson had a staff there. I can't remember the name of her person who was in charge. I think her name was Liz Carpenter, but I'm not 100% sure. They sent a letter called to the FCC and said, we need somebody to come over on a detailed to work at the White House. And I was selected to come and work at the White House.
Was that, I mean, surely you were pleased, but were you shocked that you were going to have that? And yet you went without intimidation?
I went without intimidation. I worked there. There were a lot of Saturdays you had to work. And you just answer correspondence for Mrs. Lyndon Johnson. Then I went back to the FCC, and shortly thereafter, I think in 1972, Dr. Benjamin Hooks became the first black commissioner at the FCC.
Yes, I remember.
And I went to work in his office, and I worked in his office until he left in 77 and went to New York as the executive director for the NAACP. He and his wife, Frances, asked me, would I come to New York and work for him? I then left my job in Washington, D.C., and went to New York. That was kind of a frightful experience because, as I said, I had never really been to New York. So this was my first experience going to New York and actually living there. So I stayed in New York, and then shortly after that, I went to California, and I got married, and I went to California, and I worked for the Social Security Administration California.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed there.
That was my first job out of high school. I had to work a semester and go to college a semester, work in college because of the financial situation in my family. But I think my work was probably slightly different from yours. Yeah.
I started off as a claims representative, and then I became a some other kind of representative. And then I worked in the field as a field representative. And I had to go around and speak at nursing homes and talk to these people about the benefits for Social Security. After that, my mom got sick, and shortly after my dad, and I moved back to Howard County. I stayed with my mom and dad for about a year, and then I had a house built. I became one of their primary caregivers. And then I got back involved after their death with the NAACP, and then working with the Harriet Tubman Foundation.
We have a very strong chapter now, don't we?
Yes.
The NAACP with Willie Flowers.
Yes.
I'm on a board of a literary publication with him, and I've had the pleasure and the honor of getting to know him. What are the major steps? Or they don't have to be major. Any steps at all, no matter how small, that we in Howard County can keep in mind to have an even more inclusive environment of racial and ethnic mixes here in the community, since it benefits every one of us, no matter. Do you have any thoughts on things that we could improve or things where we could cut back?
I think the most important thing that we need to do is learn to get out of our comfort zone. Get out of our comfort zone. Just because someone looks different from what we are, just because they go to a different church, just because anything that's different from us, we need to show respect to them. We need to try to learn a little bit more about them. And that's one of the things that we're going to be doing at the Harriet Tubman Building, that we're going to be including diversity in at that building so that we can learn and grow from each other. And I think that that's going to be the major step that we need to do. Respect and get out of your comfort zone.
Well, I could not agree with you more. And I want to thank you so much for being here with me today.
You're welcome.
It's been a privilege and an honor. I really mean that. I have learned so much from you in the last week since we started talking about this program. And I really look forward to working with you to our own community to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And I know as sure as we are sitting in this studio that this is what Jim Rouse would want as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This has been Reflections on Life.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.